This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
I must admit that YouTube videos of cats versus dogs, cats taunting other cats, and even tormenting their humans can make me laugh. But it's no laughing matter if it's your cat that is biting you, stalking you, ambushing you when you come around the corner, or is blatantly aggressive towards your guests. You've rationalized this unsavory behavior to the fact that it was a rescue and must have been abused, or for being feral, being a calico, being a long hair, fill in the blank. Are felines just unbalanced or inherently untrustworthy? Or are we setting them and us up for failure because we don't understand the feline mind? They really aren't just little dogs. To help us unravel the ball of yarn that's a cat's unique psyche is my guest, board-certified veterinary behaviorist and author, Dr. Elise Christensen. When she's not lecturing in the U.S. and internationally, you can find her practicing at Behavior Vets of Colorado at Animal Care Center of Castle Pines. We'll hear her great wisdom after this short break.
Today's episode is sponsored by Hanover Square Press and The Secret Language of Cats, How to Understand Your Cat for a Better, Happier Relationship by Suzanne Schatz. Have you ever wondered what your cat is saying? In The Secret Language of Cats, Schatz offers a crash course in cat phonics to help you crack the cat code. Perfect for the fans of The Lion in the Living Room and the inner life of animals, The Secret Language of Cats by Suzanne Schatz is available for purchase today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Elise, thank you. My listeners know I have two cats. My clients know I love cats, but there are some times I have no idea what they're doing.
Yes, it's a common problem for all of us. And actually, it's one of my favorite things about cat owners is their willingness to admit that they don't know why their cats do what they do. Because when you work with people who have dogs, they often have many, many, many media inputs and received wisdoms about why dogs do what they do. And not that those aren't present for cats and cat behavior, but they're a little bit less prevalent, and that makes my job a lot easier.
Well, good. See, we knew we loved cat owners. And I love dog owners, too, yes. And ferret owners and all the rest of them. So, number one question. Two of the most common misunderstood behaviors, I think, of cats are biting and scratching. Is this typically an offensive or a defensive mood?
That's a great question. Usually when cats are swatting and scratching, like doing that one-handed, one-pawed swat, we're generally looking at defensive movements from cats. People don't always take it that way because they happen a variety of circumstances where people are interacting with the cat and may have started interacting with the cat at the cat's initiation. And at the same time, most of the time when we have aggression from cats, we're really looking at underlying fear-related motivation. Of course, there's exception there, and that would be play motivation, because cats are very predatory animals, and given when they live in our very barren environments, they don't have a lot of opportunities to practice that very natural behavior. Sometimes people become the target.
Okay, that makes sense. One of the things I've also noticed being a clinical veterinarian is that there are so many more dogs in the United States than there are cats. But the majority of my clients are bringing in their dogs and not their cats. And I admit, too, that having to trundle my cats to the office to give them an exam, vaccines, whatever, I really don't like it. How can we go through the process of getting the cats into the carrier because they see it and they become so fearful?
Yes, they certainly do. And the reason is because most cats only experience the carrier when they are going to have to go in it and leave a place where they feel safe. Cats are very bonded to their locations or their home areas, their home territories. And when we remove them for any reason, even that can trigger them to feel very, very fearful. So you can imagine if we put them in a carrier and then a car, which they may have extremely limited experience with, and then take them to a veterinary hospital where things get yet scarier in spite of a veterinarian's best intentions, it's very easy for a smart cat brain to decide that the carrier is the source of the problem, because it is. It's the first step to the problem. So when we counsel cat owners about this and our kitten owners in our practice who are seeing our behavior technicians for just regular, like, hey, I have a kitten, what do I do with it? We set up kitten kindergarten private lessons for our cats, and in the future we'll be doing more social parties for them. But for now, we focus a lot on teaching cats that their carriers can be great. And it is exceptionally easy to train cats, and it's very easy to train them about the carrier. All you do is get a carrier that you like well enough to leave it out, and you make it a cat bed. And you put all the stuff that your cat likes to rest on in there. You set it in places that are sunny or warm, places that your cat already chooses to rest in. Make sure it's a brand new carrier, not a carrier used by another cat, since that can be very stressful for them. And then we usually have clients go ahead and sprinkle a couple treats in there anytime they see the cat in there. And sometimes we sprinkle a treat or two or a little bit of catnip if the cat really likes it in the carrier when the cat's not in there, so that he can come by and be pleasantly surprised and learn, hey, I should check this out. It's going to be great. When cats are resting in their carriers as a cat bed, we've already taken away the first trigger for them, which is the carrier means really bad things for me. And you can go on and do much more intense and sophisticated behavioral therapy with these cats. But if you at least start by teaching them that the carrier is a good place, and you can do that by basically spending about 15 seconds a day, you may as well.
That is fabulous, because I know my cats, I try to leave it in the garage so they don't even know that it's there.
Right.
But they're reading my body language going, uh-oh, she has something in mind and this is not good. And yes, they can understand. I was looking on your website and see that you're fear-free certified. So am I, and I love it. And I think it's really changing the way that we view these cats that come into a practice that in the past we would have just said, oh, they're just really aggressive, they're really mean cats, into thinking these are just really scared cats. What are things that some veterinarians I know listen to this show, and pet owners in particular, what are things that people can do to really dispel this is fear, not aggression? What can they do?
Absolutely. Well, you know, that is a problem on both sides of the exam room, unfortunately.
Definitely.
Just as you're talking about, where we have clients that think, oh, my cat is just really mean when he gets to the vet, and veterinarians and veterinary staff who have all sorts of names for cats that are aggressive at veterinary clinics. And the reality is that those labels don't help anybody. And in fact, they probably harm, because when we set ourselves up to think of a cat as mean, when in fact we have an animal who is in fight or flight because their brain is telling them they are about to die, that animal is in extreme distress and panic, literally existential crisis. So once we all recognize the reality of why these animals are biting or hissing or swatting at the veterinary clinic, and even before, when owners are getting them in the carrier, for instance, then I think we're in a much better place to treat them proactively, because it starts with understanding that the cause is not to give you a hard time, it's because they're having a hard time. So if we can really help these guys by providing pheromone therapy at home, you know, the Fear Free group has some great instructions on their Fear Free Happy Homes website on conditioning cats to understand that classical music and pheromone therapy mean you can be relaxed, and then we can use those in the car as well, so we kind of carry that conditioning with us from the house, the carrier, to the car. And veterinarians can pick it up from there by continuing pheromone therapy in the clinic environment and providing warm, soft surfaces for cats to cuddle up on, since they tend to like temperatures higher than what most people prefer. And we can make sure that we are keeping them away from dogs. You know, just the other day in our general practice side, we had a woman who was quote unquote, introducing her cat to a dog. And there's no cat. Okay, there are some cats that really enjoy dogs. But in general, most cats certainly do not want to meet a strange dog in a veterinary clinic. That's sort of
dog loves cats.
I know, uh-huh. Right? Well, yes. So it's like being abducted by aliens and then being placed in a cage with a hungry lion, right? Like, I like lions too, but that's not really a very good time or a good setup for it. So when we are all doing our jobs and really recognizing that even if we as clinicians are fear-free certified and working really hard to decrease fear, anxiety, and stress in our cat patients, that they may have been to veterinarians before, that we're not educated in that yet. This is not a new movement in veterinary medicine. Veterinary behaviorists and feline practitioners have been talking about it for over a decade, probably more. But it's just now gaining traction because of the wonderful branding with Fear Free. So there are a lot of veterinarians who just hadn't had an education on how to do this. As a result, our patients may have been frightened at the veterinary clinic before. And when that's the case, one of the best things we can do for them, even though clients don't like the idea sometimes, is to help stop their fear by using a medication before they come in. Because when we do that, we are now helping to protect the brain from experiencing that fear over and over again. And when the brain is fearful, especially a cat brain, their brains are extremely good at one-trail learning, and it takes them a long time to de-escalate or to sort of shake it off mentally. So if we can stop their brain from getting that agitated and going that far into fight or flight and pair that with low stress handling and really considerate approach, now we are really cooking with gas on helping these cats learn to tolerate the veterinary clinic. And if you're at a great veterinary clinic who has a behavior team, it doesn't have to be a veterinary behaviorist team, you can actually start teaching cats to like veterinary interactions. And that's part of what we do at our hospital is our technicians are trained to help cats from the time they're kittens learn to enjoy medical interactions and cooperate in their own care. And it's really not as hard as you would think, and it can be so fun.
Dr. Christensen, you're exactly right, because when I really started to incorporate fear-free, and a lot of my nurses who've been nurses for a long time looked at me like, this is crazy. This is a waste of time. This is just never mm-hmm. going to work. And little, by having the pheromones, by having towels in the room, by taking your time, it usually does take longer to say, okay, I'm going to sit on the floor with a cat. We're not going to push the kitty. Or there's many times I'll just say, your kitty has gone crazy. It's just too ramped up. Go home. I don't even want to see the cat today. No charge. And oh, by the way, here's some medication. Give yeah. it tonight. Give it tomorrow. And they come in. It's like, kitty's still a little timid, not too sure, but makes so much better. Yes.
Absolutely. And it will save you time in the future. And most importantly, now we are healing, right? Veterinarians have gone from being healers without that much stuff at their disposal to really, really help in the dark ages to having so much technology and tools and diagnostics and interventions that we can do. Honestly, our profession has forgotten that healing is not just about those things. So I would posit that it's an ethical mandate for veterinarians to add this to their therapy plans and their approach to animals, because without having a healing approach, your medicine can make progress, but it's never going to make as much progress as if you have really created a bond with that animal and that human so that you can move the patient's health forward. And so I'm really excited to see veterinarians accepting this part of veterinary medicine again, that it's not woo-woo. It is what we should have been doing all along.
And I think for listeners right now, if they're going to their practices and finding that maybe they're just not working as calmly or as effectively as they think they can ask. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Oh, by the way, have you heard of Fear-Free? Are you Fear-Free mm-hmm. certified? And they can look on the Fear-Free site and find mm-hmm. Fear-Free certified veterinary hospitals in their area. So I think that's a great yep. idea.
Absolutely. And you know, the good thing is that there's a veterinarian for everybody. So if you're a client who is not interested in having a fear-free approach, you just want to kind of come in and have a veterinarian give the vaccines and get out the door, there's a veterinarian for that. And for those clients who want to have this more healing approach, you can find them on the fear-free site and you can vote with your pocketbooks about which type of medicine feels right for you.
Dr. Elise, you had made mention a little earlier about cats just all of a sudden losing it. And it's interesting because you can have a dog that gets upset with you and then it's just kind of like, oh, hello, I love you again. Yeah. But cats can go from calm to just ballistic, and they seem to hold grudges forever. Why?
Yeah. That's a great question. The cat brain is fascinating. In fact, it's so good at intense aggression that researchers have used cat brains to study it. The thing is that we often think that cat aggressive events that seem sudden are sudden. And it's not to say that sudden aggression doesn't happen in cats. And certainly, I have also been surprised. The vast majority of the time, however, if you are watching the body language, you have been on notice for at least 2 to 30 seconds and sometimes minutes to hours to years that there is something not comfortable for this animal. But because many people do not truly understand cat body language, they end up getting themselves into a pickle and they just keep pushing and pushing and pushing until the cat bites them, and then they are surprised. So, you know, the good thing is that education is out there. The Fear Free group has a lot of good body language stuff on it. It was a great place to get started on learning cat body language and behavior and warning signals. And also, you can have a situation that ramps up, escalates to a very dangerous level very quickly in cats. And you are right. It can take them hours to days to weeks to settle down because their brains are exquisitely sensitive to this type of arousal, this behavioral arousal, this physiological arousal, where they become stressed, feel the need to aggress, and then can take an extremely long time to calm down. Part of that may be because of their combination of being both predator and prey. In order to do that well, you have to be fast in your reaction time. So when we have a cat that is very agitated suddenly, one of the most important things that people forget is that the best way to help a cat calm down for most cats is to give them their space. So that means ideally having
a
room.
Don't pick them up and hug them and love them.
No, do not try to make it better by touching them. That is the opposite of what most cats would tolerate. Instead, we get them their own room. We make sure they have everything they need in there, litter box, water, food, something to play with, and we make it, you don't have to make it completely dark, but darkened so that it's calming. Pop some pheromones in there, etc. Now, the first event, usually people don't have a safe room like that set up, but if your cat has one event like this, you can be not sure, but you should be suspicious that it could happen again. And that's your note that, ooh, I better have a safety plan in case my animal gets triggered. And if you know what triggered your cat before, that's a time where you should reach out to your veterinarian to get help, because these guys can improve a lot, and cats in that high state of arousal can be extremely dangerous. And they're at a high risk of euthanasia because of that. So while I wouldn't say a person was wrong for euthanizing a cat who had caused significant injuries, there are many families who are not willing to go that route. And for those families, we have ways to decrease the intensity and the frequency of these events. One of them is be prepared with a safe zone.
And that safe zone is a great idea if you can get that cat into the safe zone.
So. Indeed. Yeah. You know, and we, in our practice as veterinary behaviorists, we have the opportunity with our behavior techs to teach cats to go to their safe zones on cue, to teach cats about their triggers. So if we know the trigger, and many times we do, we can help the cat learn that that trigger is not so scary through a variety of behavioral techniques that, frankly, when you're doing it well, look either really joyful or really boring. But if they look like they are triggering aggressive events, then we know that it's not being done right. We need to back up. So you're right. Getting a cat to a safe zone is its own bit of an issue. Occasionally we use laser pointers because some of these really aggressive cats will still be distracted by a laser pointer and chase it into a safe zone so we can close the door.
Good idea. Other times
we might have to use an upside down waste basket or a laundry basket, a cardboard box, something like that we can toss on the kitty and then kind of slide them across the floor. None of these are perfect, obviously. You wouldn't want to have this be your one and only system for working on this problem. This is really emergency management. Just like you wouldn't have to call the fire department every time you turn on your stove, you just follow appropriate rules of turning on your stove. So the problem is that many people don't know what the appropriate management is for cats to keep them from lighting their house on fire. So we just have to go back and do that education.
Well, right now it's appropriate that we're going to take a short break. We're going to be coming back speaking to Dr. Elise Christensen about the cats that we love and will sometimes drive us crazy. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room.
The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your Cat Tree Tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. CATTREETRAY.com.
Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Lise, we were talking about taking cats to the veterinarian, and I think one of the things that's also very stressful for people, and I've seen it happen with my own cats, take one of the cats to the hospital because it maybe has a boo-boo or something, and then I bring it back. And these are cats that get along really very nicely, and now they look at each other like they're absolutely, oh my God, who are you? I've never seen you. They get upset. They're hissing. They're just beside themselves. Why and what can we do about it?
Wow, it's such a common situation, and it really blows families' minds because you can have these situations like you're talking about where these cats seem to be sort of besties. They rest together, groom each other. Somebody goes to the vet, and it's like you introduced an extremely dangerous predator to your house, but really it's just the cat they've been friends with for 8 years. Part of the reason is likely because when cats recognize each other, they recognize each other, we think, by group scent. When you take a cat to a veterinary clinic, the process of going in a carrier, especially if it's a carrier that has been living in your garage instead of in your living room and being rested on by your cats, and get in the car and go to the veterinary hospital, your cat ends up taking on all of these different scents of the veterinary clinic. Other animals, dogs, cats, stressed animals, people, alcohol, you know, the alcohol that we use to make sure that we can get the hair down and get a vessel really easily and maybe stop bacterial growth. All of these are actually probably very strong scents for a cat. And since cats know group members from non-group members or friends from non-friends by scent, we essentially have brought back a complete stranger to our home for your cat at home. And the cat that was a patient is probably, understandably, he's had a rough time. Even if he's gone to a place with low stress handling, who's really using fear-free techniques, it's still going to be a stressful event for a cat because cats are very bonded to their location. So leaving their home alone is stressful. So now we have a very stressed cat who smells like a completely different creature coming home to a cat who has no idea where they went and returning a completely different cat. It's sort of like if your husband was abducted by aliens and came back smelling like a dog and with a completely different personality, right? Like, so given that that's the extreme of what our cats are dealing with and actually probably their reality every time this happens, it's not surprising that they may have some pretty intense responses to each other when they're first reunited. So there's a few different ways to handle this. One is take both cats to the vet, which I would not recommend because that's stressful for two cats.
Now you have two pissed off cats.
Yeah, you've increased your stress by two. The other thing is we can make sure that we recreate group scent as quickly as possible. So often what we recommend in our practice, even for patients that are not seeing us, but for times when we have family members coming into primary care that may be concerned about this, is we say, okay, great, you know, now your kitty's been to the vet. When you get home, let's put your cat that was at the vet in a nice cozy room with everything that he needs. So another safe zone type idea. Often it's a bathroom, to be fair, for these guys. And close the door and just give her a little time to rest, make sure she has everything that she needs. And then we make sure that we are providing towels and bedding that the cats have both been resting on before this cat went to the veterinary clinic. And we proactively try to recreate group scent in other ways too. For instance, we might take a little washcloth and either encourage our cat who stayed home to rub his cheeks on it, or we may just rub the cheek area with it. Many cats find that very pleasurable and are happy with it. We might rub right at the top of their tail, where their tail meets their bum, with the towel as well. And then we apply that towel to the cat that was at the veterinary clinic, and we take that towel back and forth. We can also switch bedding between the cats. So depending on the level of intensity of previous response, we may actually do these for a few days. And in some cases, we use, of course, our pheromone therapy and medications or supplements to help them get through that, because it's, for us, it's no big deal. We know what happened. But for the cats, this is a huge change, very scary for them. And so the sooner we admit that as family members, the better we can take action on it ahead of time.
So it really gets down to having a lot of patience and being proactive.
Yes, and just remembering the stress that they're going through. And once you're in a situation where you feel like, okay, we feel ready, there's no hissing or growling between the door, and there's no swatting that seems aggressive, we could do start doing some parallel play, meaning that we play with both cats with different items, but kind of in the same area. And that can help them get started getting comfortable with each other again. And often, if you take those steps every time you take a cat to the veterinarian and leave another cat at home, you won't ever need to call a veterinary behaviorist. It's those people that have been seeing escalating problems over time that end up in our laps. And of course, we're happy to see them. But if you're seeing us, you're having a very bad time. So I would really like to prevent people from ever needing somebody like me.
Put you out of a job, so be careful.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the good news is so many people don't follow instructions. So there will always be business because people are busy.
Other things that will happen sometimes, and I've seen it again with my own cats. They're indoor cats, and where I used to live, there was outside kitties that would come walking by sometimes, and all of a sudden you'd hear this noise.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what's going on outside? And you look, and there's a cat, a dog, a raccoon, or whatever, and all of a sudden you try to pick up the kitty to move it, and oh my goodness, that was not the right thing to do.
Yeah, that could be so intense. When cats are aroused, behaviorally aroused, by triggers out in the environment, like new animals in the yard that they see through the window, that is a very unstable place for a cat to be, because by the time you're hearing that growl, you know that animal is going into this fight or flight system. And that system is really not about, it's not a thinking system, it's a reacting system. So when you go to touch a cat who is intensely reacting, muscles are stiff, maybe the tail's thrashing back and forth, maybe they're hissing, they're growling, maybe they're screaming is common with this type of behavior too. If you go to touch them, it's almost like you've flung a rubber band, like all that tension explodes. And it explodes on whoever gets there first or whoever's close. So if you're seeing that type of situation, there's tons of different options. One is walk away, close doors, give the cat time to calm down. If you can, you could attempt to close the blinds or go out a door and create a visual barrier. But generally, the safest thing is to just really give these cats their space until they calm down, and then we implement treatment, because we can help these cats respond differently to triggers outside, and in many cases, but not all, we can work really hard to keep triggers that would be outside away from our yards, right? We can use those motion-activated water sprayers. We can, to the extent that it is helpful, use things like coyote urine. I have a friend who works with a bunch of big cat rescues, and so she actually can get like lion urine. I was like, wow, you should borrow that.
So, that's a good friend to have.
I know, right? Just trying to create scents that are aversive to wildlife and certainly other cats to keep them away. And then we can teach these cats to respond in different ways. The main thing about behavioral therapy for animals of all types, though, whether it's a human or a cat, is that the best way to learn about a trigger is not when you're fearful about the trigger and not when you feel like you have to fight them to survive. The best time to learn is in a calm environment where things are set up for success, and you can learn some coping strategies then much more quickly than if you're already agitated. You know, if aliens were coming to abduct me, I probably would not want to be trying to figure out the New York Times crossword puzzle, right? That part of my brain is offline now.
I love it. You're talking about training, and I think, yes, sometimes we need to train the human more than we need to train the cat. Seems to be especially true when you have somebody, oh, I've owned cats for years, and they come over to visit, and here's your little kitties. They're sitting there going, new person, I'm not really sure about this, but okay. And now this person is just trying to smother and pick up and do all these things, and the cat goes, bye-bye.
Right.
So what is the best way for a person to introduce themselves to a cat?
That's a great question. One of the best ways to introduce yourself to a cat is to completely ignore them, because you will know just from anecdotal experience that the one person in the room that hates cats will get all the cat attention.
Definitely.
That's because that person is the least threatening, because they're not looking at the cats, they're completely ignoring the cats, and cats, being both predator and prey, are very sensitive to potential threats. So when we have strangers come into the environment, if you really want a cat to love you, you play hard to get like nobody's business. If you do want to interact with the cat, then the most polite way from a cat perspective, we think at this point in science, is to do what a lot of us call giving the cat the finger. And what that means is you gently, without a lot of speed, put your index finger out, kind of pointing. And I would say you present it approximately 6 inches, maybe a foot, from the cat's nose, and keep your finger still. And if you do that, many, many cats will come over and begin sniffing your finger. The trick here is, as a human, and people are primates who love to touch, primates love to touch, right? The trick here is you've got to give that cat some time to explore. And just because that cat is sniffing you does not mean he or she wants to be petted. So we give the cat the time to sniff, and if they start rubbing up against your finger, which many of them will, they'll rub their cheeks up against your finger, you could start scratching right along the cheek and under the chin. That's probably one of the most polite places you could scratch a cat, and I recommend no more than 1 to 3 scratches and then stopping. If the cat then jumps on your lap and starts to purr and all this other stuff, you could probably take your introduction a little bit further. But to start with, it's definitely play hard to get, and when you are ready to introduce, do it in a very calm way, in a way that is very respectful for cats' natural behavior, and you'll have the best success. Picking up a cat is absolutely 100% rude in cat land. Cats do not pick each other up unless it's a mother cat with a kitten, or they're fighting. So when you do that, you are very much then putting yourself in the position of a predator. So if you want a cat to like you, don't act like you're about to eat them for lunch.
I love it. So I'm wondering if this works for dating too. Just being really hard to get, just ignore them. Okay, well, I have to try that one. Mm-hmm. You were talking about petting, and this drives me crazy. And thankfully, my 2 cats right now are not of this ilk. But there are times when you go along and they're on your lap and you're petting them and life is going good. And just all of a sudden, they turn around and they nail you. They just bite you. It's like, wait a minute. You were just purring and you said you liked this and now you're biting me. What's wrong?
Right, totally. Well, it's a great question. So first, purring doesn't always mean the cat is comfortable. So it's one of those things where in animal behavior and especially in cat land, everything you think is true, some of it may be true, but it's probably not as true as you think. So a cat purring is not necessarily always a comfortable cat. If you do have a cat who has chosen to sit on your lap, you should also assume that that doesn't mean that they want to be touched, because cats like warm places and your lap is warmer than the environment generally. So they may already know, well, I'm just going to get on this person's lap, I'll be warm and cozy. That doesn't mean it's an invitation to touch. That's about knowing the cat you're interacting with. If you are going to pet a cat, petting the face and the cheeks after doing that beginning sort of giving the cat a finger, offering your index finger for them to sniff, is the best way to touch. When we look at cats, the way that they interact with each other, what we find is that they're most likely to groom each other, if they groom each other, on the head and neck region almost exclusively. And cats are much more likely to groom genetic relatives. So that means that if you are touching a cat, something sort of unusual from an evolutionary standpoint is happening. And what people often do is they may start scratching at the cat's head, but especially if they're petting while, say, watching TV and paying no attention to what they're doing, they're petting the cat mindlessly. They tend to be doing stroking behaviors. And as we look at the natural history of cats, what we find is that that's not really a very normal thing for a cat to experience. So it's not that some cats don't like that, but I would suggest that they like it because it eventually gets your hand to that place where the tail meets their lumbar region or meets their bum, because that spot where the tail meets their bum, a lot of them really do like to be scratched there for a little bit. And eventually when you stroke, your hand gets there, and you may even scratch a little bit before you restart. The problem is with the stroking behavior is that since cats are not that tactile with each other, and the stroking behavior from the head to the tail doesn't really happen, their sensory systems are not actually very prepared for this type of intense stimulation. We act like they are because many cats either tolerate it or like it, but many others can only handle that level of intensity for a short amount of time. So if you're not going to be paying attention to a cat when you're touching it, then A, you shouldn't be touching, because that's not very respectful. And secondly, if you are going to be touching and paying attention, it's important to recognize the places that cats in general like to be touched and be respectful, and then to note your cat and where your cat likes to be touched. There's an infographic that goes around the web, and we recently had it on our Facebook for Behavior Vets, about where cats like to be touched, and it has, depending on the meme you choose, it has swear words or just like no on the spots that cats don't like to be touched. So like on the belly, it would say hell no, right? And on the feet, no, no, no. Under the chin, yes, please, right? So it's actually a pretty good little infographic on the places cats like to be touched. So if we respect where they like to be touched, we pay attention to where and when we're touching, then we're much less likely to have those events where they growl or bite at us. If you see a tail moving during petting, immediately I would take your hands off a cat.
Dr. Christensen, I think we could go on for another hour or two on this topic because I'm learning so much. But okay, people are listening. They go, yes, I have a kitty that needs help. I need to find a behaviorist. What can they expect when they go to a behaviorist? What do they need to be prepared for?
That's a great question. So veterinary behaviorists are veterinarians first. And so what you should expect is that we are going to request medical records, as many as you have, and we're going to review that and look for medical causes. It's extremely common for all species that veterinary behaviorists see to have medical problems as well as behavioral issues. And sometimes these haven't been addressed in primary care for a variety of reasons. But one of them is that when you take your animal in for a primary care appointment, the veterinarian is very focused on preventive physical health and may not ask specific questions about discomfort or pain, or the clients may say the animal is fine when in reality there have been subtle changes. So as a veterinary behaviorist, my job is to take every possible medical differential very seriously. So that's one thing that you're going to find different from a non-veterinarian that does some work with cat behavior. The next thing you'll find is that most of us have history forms, and the more detailed you are on your history form, the better job we can do. I also, and many of my colleagues, ask for video of the cats in their home, even if we're going to do a home visit. Just being present in the home is very disturbing for many cats and will change their behavior patterns. So I can give clients a lot better information by reviewing videos of what the cat does with them at home, not necessarily even during a trigger event, but during times when the cat is supposedly calm, because what we often find is that the owners are thinking, this is my cat in a good mood and feeling great, and as a veterinary behaviorist, I'm able to look at that video and say, actually, not so much. We need to backtrack. Let me show you the body language that's happening here that tells us that this situation is not so comfortable for your cat. So we get so much information from video, even of situations that the clients feel is really not that pertinent. That's really where the details are. And then we're going to talk about how can we teach this cat new ways to respond? How can we avoid the trigger situation until we've done that? What supplements, pheromones, or diet could we use to help this cat really feel psychologically healthy? And if we need to, should we consider a medication to help that patient feel psychologically healthy? Because when cats are feeling emotionally healthy, their bodies are healthier too. In cats, the number one stress organ we see is the bladder. That's where we'll see a lot of our house soiling behaviors due to cat stress that creates an additional medical problem. And we can also see problems with their gastrointestinal tract and their skin when they're very stressed. So they may have all these things that really do have underlying medical causes, but they are also impacted by the pet's psychological health. And so that's where we may add in a medication to help this patient feel more comfortable until we're at a point where we've helped him learn to be more comfortable around maybe even things that are normal triggers in his environment.
Dr. Christensen, thank you so much. I think you've really removed the fur from a lot of people's eyes as to what's been going on with their cats at home, and better understand them. And really, they need to ask their veterinarian to become fear-free certified. It makes such a major difference. Thank you so much for being a guest today.
My pleasure. Thanks for letting me be on your show.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor. If you have any questions about what's going on with your pet and you'd like us to address it on air, please just drop a note to The Pet Doctor at Pet Life Radio, and we'll go ahead and do so. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.